Welcome back to the Villain Edit. Here comes the theme music. Hi, I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Ryas Hall.
We have watched some television, and it took a while, but we got through it, and we're going to talk about it. But first, I want you to understand, the weather in Seattle is still smoke. That's all it says in the app is smoke.
It's true. There's been some forest fires up in Canada, and we can look out our window, and you can't see the other side of the street.
We feel bad for you, Canada. That must have been awful for you. This here, though, this is unpleasant for us.
We do not care for this.
And speaking of unpleasant, The Bachelorette.
Ooh, nice segue.
Thank you. Here's the thing about The Bachelorette. It's basically a dumb show in which people pretend to find love in exotic locales.
Right.
This finale, which, first of all, 3 hours long...
Oh my god, 3 hours.
Normally what I like out of a show like this is moments that seem real. I get very excited when I'm like, oh, that seemed like an actual conversation. I think they were actually talking just then.
Right, and that is few. It's few and far between, those conversations.
But there was a scene in this finale where Rachel and Peter were having an actual conversation.
And they were both in tears.
And it was not fun to look at.
It was not. I believed it was a real conversation.
So.
And it sucked.
So we're going to rush through this because, honestly, I don't like this show.
Neither one of us like it. I'm not entirely sure why we embarked on this ridiculous voyage.
Because in the previous season, The Bachelor, already forgotten everything about him and everybody who was on that season.
Except for Corinne, who had an unfortunate experience on Bachelor in Paradise.
Well, we don't have to keep dwelling on poor Corinne. I watched part of one episode and a whole bunch of crazy nonsense happened. So we watched the rest of that season, we watched this season, this is going to be it for it. But here we go. It started with the end of Rachel and Peter's fantasy suite date, and they had endless conversations about having to work things out, and then the next morning the bells rang in that little town.
Right, and the fantasy suite was kind of crappy, to tell the truth. It looked like the room above your grandma's garage.
It was too rustic.
It was very rustic.
Sometimes they seem to try too hard on the fantasy suites. They want to go small and charming and genuine. Whereas the next fantasy suite date, which was with Brian, they went to a vineyard and rode horses, and Brian was bad on horses, and Rachel moped about Peter the whole time. And then they went to what looked like a very nice modern hotel room.
So what exactly is the problem with Peter? Why is Rachel moping?
Because Peter would not commit to asking her to marry him. He seems very committed to her, but
he really likes her, but he...
Proposing is such a big deal to him. He only ever wants to propose once in his life. So he's not going to do that until he's 100% sure that everything is okay.
Right, and you can't be 100% sure of a person if you've only met them when they're in full costume and makeup on a TV show.
So, on the one hand, makes sense. What he's saying makes perfect sense. But on the other hand, you signed up for a show where the goal is to propose marriage at the end.
Yeah.
And
so what are you even doing here, dude?
Like, this was as good a connection as he was ever going to get.
Oh, they really, really liked each other.
So whatever he was picturing wasn't going to go this well. Anyway, he would never commit to proposing. Eventually, he and Rachel had this just heartbreaking argument / conversation where he was willing to compromise as far as saying, I will compromise my principles and propose to you.
I love you so much that I will compromise my principles, and if you insist, I will ask you to marry me.
I will cut out my heart. Why can't you tell me now that I'm the man for you? And she kind of glances at the camera and says, I can't say that.
Yeah, because legally she has a contract.
So the way the episode went was, they had a rose ceremony, Eric got sent home. That left Brian, and it left Peter. Then she talked about Peter for the entire episode, they had this argument, and he was done. Then they had a live segment where Rachel was being forced to watch her own tears.
Yes, and then they brought Peter out to watch the tears with her.
And we fast-forwarded through a bunch of this part, but it looked like it went on at least 45 minutes, and it was very clear Peter was done right then.
Yeah.
So that meant the remaining hour of the show was Brian, the only guy left, and he won. And I will say, I always thought Brian was going to win. It still felt weird and anticlimactic.
It didn't feel like she liked Brian as much as Peter, but they're pretty much identical.
Yeah, I can't.
Brian's the one with the possessive mom.
Yeah. So the only other comment I have is that in the final proposal locale, it was really windy. Like,
it was. You could hear the mics were picking up wind noise the whole time. She was wearing that silver beaded dress that weighs like 40 pounds, which is good because it's pretty windy. She might have gotten blown away.
And there was a moment where Rachel said that there were other deep-rooted issues with Peter that came out in Geneva, and we never learned what those were. I like that because it felt like spies. You know, though, sometimes spies will say, don't forget what happened in Geneva, and we never learn about it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. They were working as spies, and he forgot the code word.
So this finally ground to an end, and Brian won, which is what he wanted, and he seemed very good at winning The Bachelorette.
Yes, he looked very nice in the suit. He bent the knee.
Now,
whole thing.
What is it that makes this show something I don't like?
I don't know. I can't imagine.
No, I'm serious. I want to explore this a little.
I feel like this show is kind of a toxic masculinity showcase.
Is that true regardless of whether it's a man or a woman at the center? It could be.
I'm not sure. I felt like The Bachelorette was like, it was like dangling a chicken over an alligator pit sometimes.
I will say, it feels very ungenuine most of the time. And the times it does feel genuine, it's because people are very sad and I don't enjoy watching that much.
Oh, look, they're genuinely miserable. Hooray. Yeah, that's no good.
Also, from what I could tell, at least half of the cast was put there specifically for drama. Like, here are two people that already hate each other. We're going to put them into the show so that they can shout at each other.
Right, they hated each other on another reality show and it was a big hit.
But, like, I didn't like the people on it, except Rachel, I guess.
I liked Kenny the pro wrestler. I thought he was nice. But
Kenny's fine, but for the most part, I'm just not into it. So, The Bachelorette and other Bachelor-related shows, not into anymore. I'm glad I know what the franchise is about, but
yeah, I felt like it was an important part of American culture that I needed to see for myself. I feel like I have seen it. And I feel like now I would just like to scrape it off of my soul, if you don't mind.
Speaking of shows with unpleasant people, you want to jump to Ink Master?
Oh yeah, what happened on Ink Master tonight? I'd like to talk about, as always, the Stupid Flash Challenge. This week they were given some
plaster.
Some hung drywall, and they were told, take this, mix up some plaster, do a bas-relief sculpture.
Now, I don't know if you've ever done a bas relief. You probably haven't because no one has. If it's your first time, it's not going to be very good.
No. And it's supposed to show, what was it we're showing?
Proportion was the magic words.
The words were proportion, except for the one guy who misheard it and thought it was perspective.
Which makes just as much sense as anything else.
Really. Yeah. So they made some plaster sculptures. And they were all equally bad, except one guy who had studied sculpture, who had a degree in sculpture.
Yeah, like he had experience with sculpture and worked with plaster, so he did well. Once again, they spent 15 minutes of their one-hour show on something that no one cares about. It's not interesting at all to see whether a tattoo artist is good at sculpting or what kind of design they can make if they pour gunpowder on a classic car and set it on fire.
I agree. I'm not, sometimes I'm unsure why I watch Ink Master.
I like seeing good tattoos, which do sometimes happen.
It's true. There were actually a few good tattoos this week, which I thought was kind of nice.
But yeah, for the most part, the flash challenges are just irrelevant. And the thing I would like to see more of on Ink Master, I've decided, especially on this team season, is the actual conspiring. The spot that actually gets people angry is when I've won the Flash Challenge, right? and I have the power to assign all the skulls for the next
round. So I assign all the artists who they have to tattoo for the next round. Then you get a bunch of people coming in saying what kind of tattoos they want.
And some of them are very difficult. Someone will be like, well, I'd like a kitty on my bicep. And everyone goes, oh, that's cute. I'm going to draw a kitty. And someone else wants, I want a motorcycle ring driven by a snake through a skull that's got a dagger in its teeth and it's on fire and I want it on my ribs.
The key word here is ribs. Oh. Anybody that gets assigned a rib tattoo automatically assumes that the person who assigned them the rib tattoo is trying to destroy them.
So the challenge of assigning all of the skulls so that the people you like get the easy tattoos and the people you hate get the bad tattoos is what causes all of the drama in the house. But we really don't get to see much of the people actually conspiring. We got a bit of that this week where people were like,
yeah, I want to see the people trying to figure out. I'm more interested in them in how they decide who gets what tattoo than I am in them being yelled at for giving those tattoos out.
I want them to say, that's an easy tattoo, but I don't want to do that one because I think I'll do a better tattoo on this one.
Yeah. Let's,
and I think that could be interesting. We don't see that much of it.
Right.
So
this was pinup week, so they all had to do pinup tattoos. And as we know from other seasons, this is usually the biggest disaster of the world.
They were given a firm scolding that the key in this week was they had to do good proportions, and that meant they had to show both hands and both feet.
Mm-hmm.
No hiding them, Rob Liefeld style. And, and also this time they had to trade off every 30 minutes, because I think the judges felt like bad tattoo artists were kind of ducking the challenges.
Right. They were like, oh, well, we're just going to have this guy do it because he's the artist and I'm just the whatever that one guy was.
Yeah, the technician.
The technician, which is crap.
So the pinups. There were some good ones. There were some bad ones.
All right. So let's kind of go through them. Allegory Arts got assigned a pinup on a guy's butt.
They were very concerned about this. Not because they didn't want to look at a guy's butt, which I was glad about because several seasons ago, there was that guy who threw a huge fit.
Because he had to touch another guy's butt.
I don't want to look at a guy's butt. Meh. That's a perfect imitation of him.
That's exactly what he was like. No, these guys didn't want a butt because when the guy dropped his pants, he had a deflated basketball in his pants.
No, I thought
he had a little flat, hangy pancake butt.
I thought that would be good. You know, it's flat. That means it's not all round, which, you know, aesthetically, I prefer round, but if I'm drawing on something,
yeah, you're going to draw on a flat surface. Unfortunately, it was a very jiggly, loose skin situation.
Now, the first thing I said was, I would try to, like, tighten that skin up, like, get his knees up to his shoulders. And later on, Chris Nunez said that exact thing.
He did. He's like, you got to position him. You got to put him on his hands and knees so that buttock is stretched tight or whatever.
So they had to do a barbershop girl that ended up supposedly sitting on a barber pole.
He just wanted a barber pole in it somewhere. So they had a barber pole kind of next to her. Like she's sitting behind it, maybe?
I think the message is something about shaving his butt.
It could be. She's got a straight razor, which has the tiniest little straight razor blade.
Yeah.
It's not at all realistic. But it's a little pin-up barbershop girl. She's got a barbershop apron. I'm not sure how her hips are supposed to connect to her butt, but
the hips were my biggest problem. The judges did not like her face, particularly her eyes and the hairline, which were pretty random.
Yeah, her hairline's pretty far back, but next up we had artistic skin design, and they did a Medusa tattoo. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's not a traditionally cute pinup. It's a Medusa. She has spots on her skin, kind of like a lizard spot.
Yeah, she's blue with purplish spots on her skin. She looks like a Hindu-style Medusa,
I would say,
much more than a Greek-style Medusa, and I really liked her.
She's got a third eye. I really like the snakes. They are fun.
Yeah, it's just theirs was my favorite tattoo of the night. Basilica tattoo, got a guy who wanted a pinup girl fishing for a bass. That's what he got.
Yeah, it looks like a girl fishing for bass.
She's got cut-off shorts, she's got a plaid shirt, she's got a cowboy hat.
What he did for the feet, they're in cowboy boots, but both of the feet are pointed at the camera so that you can't really see any of the details of the feet. Now, that's a good way of not having to worry about the proportions. I'm going to come back to that later.
If you guys are hearing the tinkle of ice, it is because we're in a 9 million degree apartment.
It's true. Black Cobra. The judges liked this. I did not.
It looked like it was... Okay, it looked like, to me, the kind of a flash tattoo you would get at a shop by a Navy base.
Yeah.
It's a sexy police girl holding a pair of handcuffs. I believe the art that they used is actually from the... That what they used as a photo reference is actually from the sexy police girl costume that you buy.
She's got weird high heels with corset boots, which are... I'm not sure
You're not going to be able to arrest a criminal in those.
I'm not sure I can explain that. Like, the front of the boots are laced up. I mostly didn't like the top of the chest, where there is a dark spot that I think is meant to indicate the bottom of the neck, but it doesn't actually look like a neck. I just was not 100% into this tattoo.
I wasn't either.
The judges, however, were super into it.
Yeah, the judges were like, oh my god, your lines are so straight. And I was like, but they're so ugly.
This was one of the top two tattoos. The other one was the fishing girl, and the fishing girl won. Yeah, Rias has successfully found a very similar tattoo.
Yes.
All right, Classic Trilogy did a... Justice.
Lady Justice. She's got a blindfold, but she's lifting it up over lifting it up to peek coyly out from under it.
It's a little bit saucy. I think this is a fun tattoo.
I feel like her legs look weird, but apparently the judges didn't, so...
Yeah, if you get too hung up on where this one leg line goes, it doesn't seem to match up with either of the ankles, but it's fine. It's a good tattoo.
There weren't any terrible tattoos tonight. Oh, I'm wrong. There was a terrible tattoo.
We'll get to that in a second. First, Empire State.
This lady wanted a Amazon tattoo of an Amazon warrior. She wanted a lot of different symbols in it. She's Peruvian, so she wanted some Peruvian stuff in there. And that's what she got.
It's hard for me to see the proportions on this because it kind of wraps around her arm.
Yeah.
So I can't see the hands at the same time as the feet. The judges whined about some of the line work, but I think it looks okay.
I think it's fine. If I went to get an Amazon tattoo and they gave me a tattoo of that woman and not the Amazon logo, I'd be super stoked.
Yeah. All right. Old Town Ink.
They had to do... Okay, so they got a bearded old angry biker.
Yeah.
And he wanted a Valkyrie pinup.
With an X.
With an X. So they showed him the first picture and he lost his damn mind.
Because the X was because in front of one of her boobs. And he said,
this is a pinup.
Why would you cover the boobs? The artist said, well, you said you didn't want huge boobs. I didn't want huge boobs. I want to see the boobs. It's a pinup.
Yeah.
So they lost about 30 minutes of work.
Yeah,
while
they lost their first 30 minutes redrawing. And what they redrew was a lady with a very long torso and little short legs. And I think they're trying to pass it off as foreshortening. But it's not foreshortening.
The torso is weirdly bent. The boobs are pointed one direction while...
The belly button's pointed another.
I'm not crazy about their choice to draw in the camel toe.
Yeah, but I bet the guy that had the tattoo specifically requested that. He looked like he would specifically request a camel toe.
This was a rudimentary tattoo.
At best. Yeah, it's a rudimentary tattoo.
Like, it needs more shading to, like, make it pop, yeah. I think. Pins and Needles. This is the one that went home.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers. They did a cowgirl.
She's supposed to be a cute, saucy cowgirl. They got the face right, but the feet are all... Okay, one of the feet looks like... If you've ever seen, like, Chinese lotus feet shoes, you know how they're, like, really weird shaped? That's what one of the cowboys is shaped.
You're right. Somebody has subjected this young lady to foot binding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Also, I didn't realize this until before, but her body is all twisted up weird. From the waist up, it looks like she's turning around to look at you. But you can see from the waist down, her feet are already pointed at you.
She needs a chiropractor.
They complained because they wanted to do black and gray and their canvas wanted color. That's not the problem here.
Also, their canvas was an older lady who had loose older lady skin and they complained about that.
They complained about that a lot.
Get those tattoos while you're young, kids.
That's how you get your best value if you get your tattoo early because you have it longer.
Right. Unkindness art... their canvas wanted a picture of a fire-eating circus girl riding a carousel horse.
They talked him into, instead, a fire-eating circus girl on a hoop.
Yeah, you know, like they hang down from the ceiling on hoops.
I think it looks great.
It looks fine. She's got great legs. The shading is really nice. They said her torso looked kind of masculine. But have you ever seen those trapeze women? They are...
Yeah.
There's some muscles up there.
They walk up and you go, oh, how lovely and feminine. And they start to climb their rope and you go, oh my God, those shoulder muscles.
Yeah.
So this is clear. This reads perfectly. She's got exactly the right kind of tiny hat with enormous plume in it.
The tiny hats.
They're there.
So that was what the competition was. Pins and Needles went home on their weirdly shaped chiropractic cowgirl. And they announced that the next week when the new team comes in to replace them, it'll be the last new team to come in.
Thank God.
Oh, I know. It's just going to make the season so long.
A lot of the show this week was about how there's the Alliance. But I don't know who's in the Alliance. I really don't know which teams are which. And I think that's just bad storytelling on the editors. But I will say this for the editors. One of the contestants collapsed near the end of the episode. During the judging.
Yeah,
I gotta sit down.
Grabbed his heart. Thought he was having a heart attack.
He said, this happens all the time. His wife standing next to him immediately says, no, it doesn't. And Dave Navarro says, your wife says it doesn't, dude.
Yeah.
Like, nobody was buying that.
And they immediately rushed over. The judges rushed over, helped him get into a chair. Like,
but what I liked about it was, in almost every reality show, if you have footage of somebody clutching their heart and sitting down, you go into and come out of every commercial with that footage.
Right, so everybody comes back and they're like, did that guy have a heart attack yet? Nope, not yet.
But they did not milk this for coming soon, the most dramatic judging ceremony ever.
Yeah, they didn't, and it was really an odd choice.
I really liked it, because it didn't have anything to do with the story of the episode. He's okay, I guess. And he's not the team that went home. So they just didn't bring it up until it happened. We saw it last week once in the coming next week. But that's reasonable.
Also, we only had two judges this week. Oliver Peck was not there because he had a medical emergency.
Oh, no. I hope he didn't swallow one of those toothpicks.
I'm worried about his mustache.
We're only sassing him because we saw him in the previews for next week. So
we know
fine.
He'll be back next week and he's okay. It was probably just a hangnail or whatever tattoo artists get.
It's weird because he was there earlier.
Right. He was there during the Flash Challenge and then he just wasn't there. And they're like, he'll be fine, but he had a medical emergency. That's worrying.
Yeah. It's interesting that this show does not go to a guest judge in this situation.
No.
Like, they don't have... They've had a lot of guest judges, but they don't have the face-off style, like, this is who we bring in when V is busy.
Right.
It's Lois Burwell is who the automatic guest judge.
Everyone loves Lois Burwell.
Of course, sometimes Face-Off has very special guest judges.
This week, they had a guest judge that I love.
Why don't you talk about how much you love this man?
Rick Baker. Rick Baker is amazing, and he has been my hero forever. Did you know that he did the gorilla costume for the 70s TV series Ghostbusters?
Did you know there was a 70s TV series Ghostbusters?
Yes, it was two words, Ghost and Busters, and it was three guys. Well, it was two guys and a gorilla.
At least one of them was wearing a stupid-looking beanie, right?
One of the guys was named Spencer, the gorilla was named Tracy. And then there was a guy named Kong, Spencer, Tracy, and Kong. But Kong wasn't the gorilla. That was the hilarious joke.
No, they got
me. It was Forrest Tucker.
I know it's Bob Burns in the suit, right?
Bob Burns was in the gorilla suit. In fact, Bob Burns is the person that gave Rick Baker his start. It's because he said that this guy brought his 12-year-old son over. And he said, my son wants to do special effects makeups. And Bob's like, okay, let me show you how to do a couple things. And then next week, the 12-year-old came back and did some of the most amazing makeup he'd ever seen. And that's how that goes.
Rick Baker is incredibly important in the world of special effects makeup. Especially werewolf stuff, like American Werewolf in London.
He did Thriller. That. Gorillas in the Mist. he did those gorillas that people didn't know were puppets. They never credited him in the credits because people thought they were real gorillas and they wanted to keep that illusion. He's super good.
And he's super nice. He is retired, but you said he still makes costumes for the local
kids.
Oh, yeah.
He's got, like, an Instagram, I think, and he does, like, loves to make awesome Halloween costumes for his kids who are grown up now, and they do cosplay. And he's just awesome. He's a great guy, and he's one of my personal heroes.
And he is a legitimate legend in this industry, and it's so great that he comes by to just be a guest judge on Face Off.
Yeah, this week's face-off challenge was aliens.
They were introduced with a list of fun and friendly.
Right, they have to be fun, friendly aliens, not scary aliens.
The examples were Men in Black, which I think leans towards more scary than they were hoping for.
Yeah.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Galaxy Quest.
Right.
So more whimsy.
A little more whimsy, but not too much whimsy. We're not going full Tim Burton. Sorry, V. they were each given a recording of a sound that had come from a sound from space, and they had to base their creature design on the sound. This has no bearing on anything else that happens during the competition,
no.
Except that one of them got a clicking sound, so he made a drummer.
Michael Westmore did ask, how did this lead you to this? But the judges never ask that. They don't
care.
Yeah,
the judges don't care.
I think this was the first time we got a new caption, it looked like to me, where it said, day one of three, 7 hours.
Yeah, so, yeah, they decided to tell us since we're getting close to the finals. Also, I liked that this was an individual challenge week, not teams. I was so sick of those teams. I think it was hurting everybody's work.
The instant it's individual challenges, I am already so happy because people now, when you see someone comment on someone else's work and say, I like that, you should try this. Now they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart
instead of because their team will lose.
Someone has trouble opening a mold. Next shot, somebody's there helping them. Next shot, two people are there helping them. I love that, and it's what makes this
show special.
And
they're not all people that were on the same team. They were like, okay, everybody work together. We got to get this cowl out of the mold.
I like that. Before we get to the looks, can I just say what I think the problem is with this season?
I would love to know what it is.
Every challenge should be given one more day.
I agree. I think I've said that on past podcasts, that I feel like if you're doing four looks, you should have an extra day.
I understand. I think they feel that they want to show people panicking and running around and running out of time because that's more dramatic. I want to see people have all the time they need so they can turn out really good looks because I want to see really good makeup.
Right. I'm not watching this to see half-assed makeup that somebody threw together out in the parking lot. I can do that myself.
Right. The blind panic might be fun. The results of the blind panic are less fun.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. So we have five people left in this and two of them are going home before the finale.
Right. I can't remember who they are.
Well, first up is Andrew.
Right. Andrew is the guy who has the mask, who works at a mask factory, and that has been a kind of a detriment to him. Uh-oh, it's the cops.
Hi, cops. I think it's actually a fire engine.
It's pretty smoky out there. It could be anything.
You guys, it is rough out there.
I'm not used to air I can see. I'm sure some of our listeners in, like, other countries, like our listeners in China are used to that.
That was a fart noise. I made a fart noise because you said air you can see.
Oh, you're so funny.
It's an audio joke for the audio medium, like I'm a classic radio comedian.
I am so lucky to have such a witty boyfriend. It's like working with Oscar Wilde.
I'm basically Mel Blanc over here.
You wish.
I'm Jack Benny's car.
All right, so first contestant is Andrew. Andrew's the guy that owns the mask shop. He did, at all of the stuff he has constructed, has been very mask-like. This time he did kind of a punk rock alien who wants to be in a band. She's yellow and kind of brownish with big dreadlocks. Her head is shaped a little bit like a cantaloupe.
Yeah. He was a little worried because his cowl was too heavy and it started slipping forward on this model's head. In the first time the judges saw it, they decided, he was thinking, eh, it looks fine. That's where a wrinkle could naturally happen. It looks organic. And he was right. But he had also told his models to do a lot of headbanging.
So by the time they got to the end of the competition, it was a little more, it was much more obvious that there was a wrinkle there from the cowl. But the judges didn't really knock him down for that or say anything bad about it.
By that point, this person has been in the makeup for hours.
Yeah.
They know.
They've been, yeah. Next up, we had Kirsten. She's the giggling girl. And she did a weird mushroom-headed alien.
Her goal was she wanted somebody without a face, but she also wanted to make it clear that this person smiled a lot.
Because she's for the whimsy.
Which I don't think she actually achieved. She tried to put,
she did a little slit mouth, and then she tried to make some smile lines around it. It looks really alien, and the paint job is gorgeous. It's bright yellow and brown with some blue. It's beautifully painted.
She won. The judges decided that actually the face was not the focal point. The top of the head.
Right, the mushroomy part.
Which is brown and black and yellow, but with this really cool-looking blue thing poking through.
Yeah.
Like, I think it looked really cool, and the judges were correct to say, the face isn't the interesting part. That's not where I was looking anyway.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Casey.
Casey did what she said was a marine creature. So it's painted. Okay, so the body paint is what you would see on a Na'vi. Blue stripey.
Yes.
The neck area, starting from the collarbone and going up to the head, is just terrible lumps. It's like a pile of goiters.
She had a lot of edges that she had to deal with, and she kept covering up by adding new pieces and new prosthetics, and it ended up just more and more lumps.
Yeah.
Which were not actually my problem with this whole look. It was what the judges didn't like.
I did not like the extra lumps. Mm. It brought back bad memories for
me. My problem was that when you looked at it from the side, there is the biggest mold line this show has ever seen.
Oh my god, the mold line on this costume is like the Grand Canyon of mold lines. It's at least half an inch.
There's just this giant vertical line cutting through all of the curves and stuff.
Yeah, I felt like that needed to be covered.
And the judges never mentioned it because I think they just make allowances for people having to work very quickly.
Yeah, it was the worst I've ever seen on this
because
show.
Because they have one shot at the molding, right?
Yeah. The alien's face, she modeled kind of on a snapping turtle. And it's got a crest, I believe. Somebody said it was a space turkey.
Yeah.
It's not good.
My thing was, this is a blue guy in orange board shorts and a kind of shock of red up at the top. And it reminds me very much of the look of Blanca, who admittedly is green, but is mostly kind of has like red board shorts and a shock of red up on top and horizontal lines on the forearms.
Yeah. Next up, Faina. It's hard to pronounce her name, and my name's Rias, so I shouldn't complain. Faina did a guy who, she said it was based off a squid, but she was showing us pictures of cuttlefish. So he's got kind of a pointy head. He's painted blue.
He's got a mouth that looks kind of like Jim Carrey doing Fire Marshal Bill.
Ah, you're right, he does.
He was wearing a very strange suit, which I liked. It's like a burgundy suit with a yellow shirt, which matches some of the highlights in the makeup.
Yeah.
But it was weirdly stretchy. It had a drop.
Okay, first off, it's way too small for the model.
It is.
You can see how the you can't. But if you looked at a picture of it, you would see that the vest buttons are pulling.
Yeah.
Pulling terribly, and the pants had like an MC Hammer crotch.
They were a drop crotch, which Project Runway insists upon being fashionable and always looks ugly.
I don't think they were a drop crotch on purpose. I think that's just as far as he could pull them up because they were too small.
There was a very strange bulge at a spot on the pants where you don't normally see a bulge.
Well, you wouldn't normally expect a bulge.
The final look was by Nelson, who leaned hardest into the fun and friendly concept.
Yeah, this was some kind of Knott's Berry Farm floor show. Hi, I'm a friendly alien. And of course he did the stupid tourist thing where you dress it up in a Hawaiian shirt and give it a camera so it looks like it's just visiting.
It kind of reminded me of the movie Paul, you know, that one.
Oh, yeah.
The movie Paul Simon had like and a, Nick Frost don't like to talk about.
Right, if Paul had like a beak, yeah, like a chicken beak.
Because he's got all the generic tourist stuff, your Hawaiian shirt, your camera, your fanny pack. I didn't like the paint job on it because it's all super bright green and then some dark blue.
Right, it's a fluorescent green undercoating with a dark blue and a green, what do you call that, dry brush over it, maybe?
Well, stencil is my problem. It's like, it's so clearly airbrushed using a stencil, which again is because he doesn't have time to do anything else, but it just looks like airbrushed using a stencil. He spent a lot of time on the eyeballs. The eyeballs look cool.
It has a, what did he say, tree frog eyes.
Tree frog or gecko, something like
tree
that.
Tree frog eyes. Right. Which are kind of cool looking. But overall, it's a little bit too Lost in Space, the TV series.
Yeah. I mean, also, all he did was the head. The judges didn't bring this up, but I thought that might have been a problem. Because it's not an interesting cowl.
It's too cartoony.
So, in the end, what happened was that Kirsten won.
Right, that she did that mushroom head dude with the six eyes and that nobody looked at his face.
Andrew with his punk rock drummer and Casey with her blue lumpy neck who was carrying around a vacuum cleaner.
For no reason.
They both went on to the finale.
Yes.
That means the people that went home were Faina and Nelson.
I was sad to see Faina go. I think she's really talented.
She really impressed me early on. She was the one who decided to be her team's paint captain back when cohesion was the goal.
Right. Yeah, I liked her and I liked her work. I think she's fine. She's not like some of the people who were eliminated early on who I cannot imagine ever being allowed to work outside of the context of a haunted mansion.
Yeah, like Faina, I think she's really good with makeup and paint. And since in actual work, you usually only have to do one thing, not sculpt everything.
Yeah, I think she's fine.
And I expect to see her again in some All-Star season or maybe Game Face, whatever that TV show
Whatever Game Face is.
So it seems like Face Off is coming dangerously close to the end of
its
season.
We've got like one more episode left. Who knows what kind of wacky crap they're going to make them do.
And we don't know how long until Ink Master is done, because they still have the same number of teams.
They just keep bringing in more teams. It's just going to go on and on and on forever, a million years of Ink Master.
But at least Bachelorette is gone, so we are opened up some space there.
And I noticed that the new Face Off show starts like a couple weeks after Face Off.
Yeah.
So we don't have long to wait for that. We're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, we also had a Forged in Fire this week. They had to make... What did they have to make?
The first thing they had to make was a dagger out of Canister Damascus.
Canister Damascus sucks.
We have learned a lot about Canister Damascus. One thing we knew is that you are supposed to coat the inside of your canister with liquid paper. That will help it not weld too hard to the stuff inside it. Then you fill your canister with bits of metal and metal powder to fill up all the space, heat it way up, and compress it for a giant forge weld.
Right.
But what we learned this time is that if people are in too big a hurry, they won't let their liquid paper dry, and then they'll get on the stuff they're pouring in, and now the stuff they poured in won't forge weld to itself.
Right. And so that happened. A bunch of people just had atrocious failures, including a guy that, when he came in, said, "I don't make mistakes." He was the first to go.
He was not the first to go, actually.
Wasn't he?
No, Francesco was the first to go.
Ah, poor Francesco.
So, here are the people. We have Alf. He is a master blacksmith for 60 years. He brought his great-grandfather's tools. He thinks very highly of himself. His full quote was, "I don't make mistakes. I get everything right. First time. Every time. I have no weaknesses. None." He also has defiantly idiosyncratic facial hair and two sleeve garters that were never used for anything but making his biceps look weird.
It is true. The sleeve garters, you're supposed to roll your sleeves up and then use the garters to keep them from falling back down. And they just sat there being sleeve garters. He was all dressed up for TV. He had a very nice leather vest and leather pants.
And I really wanted to see what his home forge looked like.
Yeah, because his family's been blacksmithing for like,
Ten generations or something?
I would love to see what that home forge looked like.
But he had never done a canister Damascus, and I felt that it showed.
It did. Well, let's start with what happened to Francesco. Okay. Francesco opened his canister to find it full of ball bearings and unmelted powder.
Francesco teaches 15th century swordplay and used to sing in a heavy metal band.
Yes.
He used... But most of the canisters we see are long and open up at the top, and you just pour everything in. He used a canoe canister, which it turns out you can do, where the long end opens up.
Oh, you can try.
It did not go well. So his first thing, complete failure.
Yeah, like he opened the canister and stuff just fell out. And it was really sad.
So he had to do it for a second time. It mostly worked, but then he was really far behind. He managed to hammer out some metal, but then it was too long, so he had to cut it short. And
yeah,
then,
it wasn't knife-shaped.
And then he was too late to quench.
Oh, right. He didn't get the blade quenched. Like, that's what happened, because he didn't spend enough time. Yeah, he didn't have enough time to heat it.
And unlike every other time on one of these shows where they're like, you know, barbecue pitmasters, 5 minutes to turn in. Oh, no, my brisket's not ready. Phew. Made it just in time.
He did not make it just in time.
He put his metal back into the forge to heat it up for the quench with a minute and a half to go.
Yeah, apparently it takes 15 to 20 minutes to get your metal hot enough to quench. That's what we learned this week.
And he just didn't make it. So he just did not go through to round two. Regardless of what anyone else did, you have to quench in round one.
I noticed another thing about this week. The blades at the end of round one were far less finished than usual.
I blame Canister Damascus.
Canister Damascus sucks up a lot of time.
They spend so much time heating it up and forge welding it, and then trying to get the canister off of the metal they forged together in the middle.
Right.
So we saw Don. Don is from Texas and has degrees in nuclear engineering. His looked great. He had a big...
He was a big, quiet guy, just got shit done.
Yeah.
He didn't make a big show out of stuff.
He had a big hunk of metal. What he turned in on round one was pretty much knife-shaped, but much thicker, and that was good because the judges said, forge thick, grind thin.
Right.
And the other guy was Jason, who has been doing this for 12 years and chews horses. He is one of the horse-style blacksmiths.
Right, so him and Alf should get along because Alf was also a blacksmith, master blacksmith.
So my notes after round one is that Alf had a crusty, gunky knife with lots of flakes and fissures. Jason didn't look that bad, but it sure wasn't smooth, and the tang was a piece of metal, like, sticking off, kind of off-center.
Yeah, it wasn't off-center at all. It was a messed-up tang.
And Don's looked fine. So Francesco went home. Round two was all about grinding.
Oh, the grinding. It was like a strip club in there, am I right?
Sure.
Ah!
Because Don's looked okay, but he had to grind it down, you know, so he could have an edge. The other two had so many fissures and delaminations that they were hoping that if they ground it down enough, they'd find some unmessed up metal in the middle.
That didn't happen.
They were told that they're going to be doing a stab test into a giant oil drum. Then there would be a ham stab and ham slice.
Ham stab.
So they had to add a guard.
Right, because you can't do a ham stab. I just like saying that.
I know you do.
I just can't help myself without a guard because, you know, you're stabbing a ham. Your hand to slide down into the ham.
They need a guard to keep their hand from sliding into the blade. Alf's plan was to make a burn-through handle, which is something that you should do a lot in Season 1 and almost never worked out.
Yeah, it almost never worked, so people stopped doing it quite so much.
What you do is you kind of drill a hole into a piece of wood. And you heat up your tang, and you just ram your tang into that wood, and it sticks somehow.
Well, that drills the hole, then you fill the hole with epoxy, I guess, and you stick it back in again, and it glues together.
Yeah. That's kind of what he did. He also decided to show off by sculpting a guard out of his handle material.
Right, so basically he just made a handle that was a little wider on the bottom.
Yeah.
It was a flange. It was more of a flange than a handle, I think.
Don found a piece of, like, antelope horn or something, and it was hollow, so he just dumped a ton of epoxy into it.
Called it done.
The judges really liked that plan, by the way. Alf started talking about how he does primitive work, and I got real curious about what he actually does.
Mm-hmm.
Because before he was talking about how he was perfect, and now, meh.
Yeah, he's perfect.
Anyway.
Doing primitive work. But I did like that his hammer had names.
Yeah, he had one of his...
That's his grandfather's hammer? It's got a name.
One of his hammers was named Samson. Anyway, when it came time to the round two test, Jay Nielsen noted that Alf did not actually put a guard on his thing.
Yeah, you can't do a ham stab when you just got a flange.
Well, he could have done the ham stab, but he definitely couldn't do the oil drum stab.
Well, no, you can't do an oil drum stab when all you got's a flange.
Because if you're holding the handle and you stab down, the blade is going to get stopped, and then your hand will keep moving down along the sharpened blade. So Alf got sent home, and he talked some more smack on his way out. That left us with Don and Jason, the two least colorful people on the list. One of them is from Texas, and one of them is from Oklahoma, so they did the usual kind of...
Texas and Oklahoma! Ooh!
Yeah, apparently they don't like each other.
Right.
They had to make a gladiator scissor, and we talked a lot about how to describe a gladiator scissor to you, the audio...
Okay, so I think I have it.
All right, what do you got?
You know when you have a Captain Hook costume for Halloween, and you get that little bell thing that covers your arm, and you got a little handle inside, and then it's got a hook sticking out?
Yes, I do.
It's like that, except that the hook is cut off, and it's got a little moon-shaped, like half-moon-shaped blade on there.
Got it. So if you stabbed forward, you're stabbing somebody with the curved part of the blade.
Yes, and if you slash them, you're slashing them with the curves. Part of the blade, and hopefully the back part of the blade is also sharp so that you can slash around and dig around in the entrails.
That's the best we're going to be able to do. It's kind of shaped like a Pit and the Pendulum pendulum.
Yeah, that's what the blade looks like. It looks like the pendulum in Pit and the Pendulum.
And the sleeve, the like arm guard, is very crudely riveted shut in the example.
Yes, it comes up to the elbow.
Now, obviously, neither of these guys have ever made or heard of this before. It is allegedly something Roman gladiators used.
Sure, they would give a gladiator anything they could find. Spatulas.
Yeah, they thought...
Because they were pretty bored. They're like, oh, well, we saw him fight a lion last week. Let's see if he can fight a lion with a spatula this week.
They thought it was funny.
They're
like, look, I made this up. It's called a gladiator scissor. And even back then, the gladiators are like, this is not scissors. What are you talking about? Oh, here comes the lions.
Yeah, exactly. We know a lot about history. We should do a history podcast because we know so much.
That's a great idea. So they both worked and had some problems and finished it. Jason's, I thought, was ugly.
It was pretty ugly. Jason is a blacksmith, not an armorer.
The only thing that was kind of a artistic note is that he put it in little iron crosses onto it.
And welded those down, and it looked like he made an effort to make it look nice, but basically, it was a blackened, kind of a blackened piece of steel with a flange
and
blade
the
on it.
The crescent wasn't that curved. I think if you poked it forward, you'd hit people with a flat blade.
Yeah.
The other guy, Don, his looked beautiful.
Yes, Don actually has been making armor for years. So he was able to get this beautiful, shiny, chromed-up sheet metal and bend it into shape, and it was very shiny and very nice.
It's a little like on Ink Master, where they just coincidentally had one guy who was good at sculpting. On this show, if you have to make armor, 25 to 33% of the contestants make armor a lot.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because we always have a contestant who is SCA or Ren Faire or both friendly.
Certainly friendly.
That's what you do if you're a knife maker. You go to the Ren Faire. I hope we can find a knife maker at the Ren Faire.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad for them if it's at all this hot.
They're used to being on a forge. They're used to that.
Yeah, you're right. In the tests, both of them did very well. Jason's got a slight edge roll.
A tiny little edge roll.
This was in the test where a sword powered by hydraulics wanged the forearm guard a couple of times.
There was a little tiny dent. There was a dent in it.
A tiny dent on Jason's, no dent on Don's.
Right. Don's was the fancy armored one. The problem was Don did not put any padding in his, whereas Jason's was full of a nice soft foam.
Yeah.
So when you punched forward in the one that wasn't padded, you could get a bruised knuckle.
Yeah. David Baker found it a little uncomfortable. In the end, Jason did a very successful gladiator scissor, but because of that one rolled edge, he got sent home and Don won. And I thought that was fun.
A successful gladiator scissor sounds terrifying to me. It sounds like something that they would announce in, like, maybe it's a figure skating move, the gladiator scissor.
I was thinking more of a, like, WWE finishing move.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, it's the gladiator scissor.
It's doing the gladiator scissor off the top rope.
No one has ever survived this.
So that's how we felt about Forged in Fire.
We
enjoyed the hell out of it, as always.
We are starting to run out of shows in the summer. We're going to have to let the current crop, you know, finish and then see what other bounties the television gods have for us.
The hot rumor is that the next season of RuPaul's Drag Race is going to be an All-Stars season.
I expect we will have opinions about that.
We will. I know people that already have opinions about it, but I have been staying away from that part of social media so that I can get the joy of discovery when they're officially announced.
We'll talk about this on a future episode, but I want you to think about this question. Does Valentina get to come back?
Oh.
On the one hand, lots of fans.
Beloved by many.
But.
Hated by the other queens.
Well, then it seems like the answer is definitely yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that taken care of. There are probably some other slots to fill, too.
Well, yeah, they're going to bring back that chick that, Eureka, she broke her knee.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that's a future episode.
It is a future episode. It's many future episodes. One thing I think we can both agree on is that we are so glad that The Bachelorette is over.
I just don't like that show.
I am.
It's not convincing on a search for romance level.
No, you can't marry somebody. Well, I guess you can marry anybody you want.
I mean, there's Married at First Sight. This show has a worse record than Married at First Sight.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not sure how Married at First Sight works. I've never watched it, but I guess it's... Uh-oh. That's not a dare.
We have to go now. I have to talk at Riot into something. Okay, bye. Oh, wait. If you want to follow us or this television or this podcast on Twitter, you can do so. I am at @Monty_Ashley. Where are you on Twitter? She wasn't ready for this question.
I wasn't ready for this question. I believe Sublime_Rias.
And if you wish to follow the podcast, we are at Villain Edit. That's at @VillainEdit. Rias is in fact at Madam Shinigami.
Oh.
That's at MadamShinigami.
Is there not an underscore in there?
There's no underscore in there. Madam Shinigami. Shinigami. And I am at @Monty_Ashley. Figure out how to spell it yourself.
You've just revealed my tragic anime past.
Okay, bye.